Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their travel trailer, which they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. In my other life, I'm in the field of bookkeeping and tax prep, so I often bring up the financial end of things. In a way, everything is about debits and credits. For you non-accounting people, that means that when one side goes up, the other side must go down. Balance. It seems like a pure accounting thing to some, but in fact, you can apply that principle to every single thing in the universe when you think about it. Think about that little desktop mind toy called a Newton's Cradle. For those of you who might not have an immediate mental picture, that's the little device that illustrates the conservation of momentum and energy. Imagine a miniature set of monkey bars where little metal balls are hanging from strings instead of a kid hanging by his arms. Imagine five or six of the little balls suspended by strings in a row, touching each other closely. You pull on one end and pull it out and drop it so it swings like a pendulum. And when it gets to the bottom of the arc, it whacks against its neighbor. The energy is transferred through the row to the ball on the far side, which then jumps away. Then it hits the end of its arc and it comes back and hits the row. Everything in the middle stays still, but the impact keeps going on and on until friction wins and the balls eventually stop. This transference of something that's often unseen occurs in other fields as well, including that area that interests me greatly, that of the transfer of costs and benefits in all the things we do as a society. Think about the philosophical parallel between the little cradle with the metal balls all transferring things back and forth, and how we interact as organisms. And that leads to the theoretically simple but practically difficult question. How do you maximize efficiency and minimize friction so those little things can move for as long as possible before they stop? Anyone who has ever played around with a Newton's cradle knows that if the balls aren't lined up well, or if they're far apart, the amount of time that they keep going is going to be shortened very drastically. Efficiency is key, or there's a reduced lifespan of usable energy. These last few weeks we've seen on the news that there's been a huge backlog of tankers stacking up off the ports in California. Long Beach, LA, Oakland ports are in or next to our largest metropolitan areas in the Golden State, so it stands to reason that it was only a matter of time before the congestion concept spread from the freeways to the cities. Okay, maybe it doesn't work that way, but sounded right, didn't it? In actuality, it appears that, among other things, the influx of Christmas goods, in conjunction with the supply chain disruptions just beginning to flow again, and personnel shortages in the distribution chain, well, we have a bit of a logjam going on in the shipping ports. According to a recent CNN article, there are 200,000 freight containers on ships sitting at anchor off the coast of LA, waiting to be offloaded. Again, the same type of gridlock that you've seen if you drive the nearby freeways after 2 p.m. or before 11 a.m. It's a holy mess. Except with floating things. You might as well be at anchor sometimes if you're in a car in the I-5 or I-10 during daylight hours, so we're just passing that along. Seriously though, when you move a lot of people or lots of things back and forth, and some of those things come from or go to somewhere that requires multiple steps, it's easy to lose efficiency between each step. Just like those little metal balls if they're not lined up perfectly. To make everything worse in this regard, we as a population seem to really prefer things that have been brought in from somewhere else instead of things that are right close by. It might be because they seem to be cheaper. At first glance, that might be true. Cost is pretty specific and it's a hard and fast number, right? Look at the sticker and that's what the cost is. But maybe not. Think about those tankers and what the harbor looks like right now. I don't know about you, but when I see that, I think about the money meter ticking away. Someone has to get paid for all that waiting around, so it's a very easily quantifiable number. And then to clear the logjam, lots of people are going to need to put in overtime. Easy calculation. But What about the additional time it takes for everything else that gets impacted? Just like when people get stuck on a freeway, you have to calculate the additional time every single person on the road has into the mess. If you make $20 an hour and wait 2 hours, that's $40. Both ways, $80. You could calculate the things like the additional time added to the fee for the babysitters waiting for the late commuters to emerge from the mess, or the work time that everybody lost, or the cab fares ticking higher and higher as travelers waited to get to LAX. That thing goes on and on for the actual costs. But then there are the indirect costs, like doctor visits when acid indigestion eats holes in everyone's stomach as they wait, or the migraines from the bass on the cars in the next lane, or, well, those go on and on too. But my point is this. Here's the accounting part again. There are often costs inherent in all of our purchases that may or may not be recognized on the sales ticket. Some costs are things that people would know immediately. And some things, like the antacids, might only occur to a few. The one big cost that is my own personal crusade is the one that impacts all of us, whether we realize it or not. It's one of the most critically important costs that we could possibly pay, and it's getting more expensive every day with every single incident. That one is what I might call the extinction of knowledge. My mother could knit and sew like an expert. And she learned those skills from her mother, who was stellar at both as well. I cannot, to my sorrow, do either thing. The most I can do at this point in my life is to buy from those who keep the skills alive. Today's podcast is from a conversation we had at the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival 2021 in Rhinebeck, New York. I would say that our guest is a woman I met by chance, but that's not really true. Her name is Lise Barsuglia Madsen, and there was no chance at all that I was going to walk past her stall with those beautifully knitted sweaters and hats and mittens and scarves waving gently in the wind. They called to me like sirens on the rocks until finally I succumbed and walked over to the booth. It's one of the more expensive podcasts we will have done, I must admit, but if you were there touching all that gorgeous fiber, you would have understood, I think. It takes time to do handwork. I don't know how to knit or sew or crochet, so I'm not trying to throw stones here. But the more things we buy that are mass manufactured, the higher the eventual cost will be when everyone who knows how to do a handwork-related skill is outbid, outpriced, outsourced, and then out of the market altogether. When the people who know how to do this type of thing can't afford to do it for a living anymore, the skill will die out. And then we will all be the poorer for it, even if we didn't know how high the price was when we bought something else. And that alone is an excellent reason to pay more for something you might get somewhere else. Because the cost of cheaply manufactured goods is not really cheap, after all. You just don't see it at the register. I had a conversation with an unnamed relative once, and it strikes me even now. He found out what I paid for locally produced, humanely sourced meat, and he looked at me like I was crazy. He said, "Why would you pay that much for hamburger when you can go down and get it for half that? That's stupid." And I guess it is. But if I do it the other way, in the long run, I would find out that it just might be way too expensive. Hi, would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Lise Barsuglia Madsen.
And tell me about your company here at the Rhinebeck, actually New York State Sheep and Wool Festival.
Yeah, this wonderful, amazing festival right here in the middle of the autumn colors. Of course, we have all the colors from the outdoors, which goes indoors too, you know. So we get inspired by being here, by the people wearing their finished product from our yarns and other people's yarns and different designers. It's just amazing. It's an amazing festival.
This is very much a grassroots thing, isn't it? Because everybody has different designs that they show off every year.
Yeah. I mean, you can give two people the same exact colors and yarn and the same needles, and they'll come up with two totally different items. You know, we all think differently, thank God. That's what makes it fun, you know.
And people work all year to have different designs. They show off. Sometimes there's knitting groups that get together and do the same design.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful combination. When you get here, it's this richness of color and shape.
Yeah.
And much of it is products that are made for the knitting community. So you might have wool that's available to be knit. But there are also additional products. You have some here that caught my eye. I'm gonna come over here and feel this sweater because I've been eyeing this. Now tell me about this sweater.
So that's my own design. It's all hand-dyed and, of course, hand-knit. And it took a long time to come up with a design. I had prototypes, which didn't work. And the other very important thing is finding the right buttons. And these buttons happen to be from Ram's Horn, and he's here over in the agricultural building. So he was a teacher and decided that he liked making pewter buttons instead. And these are like based on antique button designs. So the solid pewter, which is something you can't find anywhere else, but spending the time making something, that's like the little detail is extremely important too. And that's what we think about when we are making something like this. So there's a lot of hours that goes into making something like this, not just dyeing it, but just the whole idea, doing the math, coming up with the design, and then keep tweaking it and improving it. And people don't realize that when they see the price on the sweater and they complain about the price, and you kind of ask them, well, what is your hourly wage? You know, I mean, would you be sitting on your butt for this many hours doing all this work and then just asking this for it? You know,
yes.
It probably should be a lot more, but it's, I think people look at something that's wearable and then look at what they can buy in the regular store. And the two are totally different, because something like this is going to last a lifetime. But what you buy in the store is going to last a season, maybe two, depending on how well the quality is.
But this is something that I go back and forth on. I love this sweater, but it's just kind of almost a work of art. And a part of me says I wouldn't want to wear that. I would want to keep it in my closet and every once in a while go and look at it, and because it is a work of art.
But it improves with age. The more you wear something, the better it, you know, it gets better with age. Handmade items improve with age, and if it's hand knit, it's just going to last. It's like you pack so much more fiber into something that's hand-knit than if it's machine-knit. And that's why we try to create things that the machines cannot create, you know.
Now this says how many different colors and different types
there's
of yarn?
There's only two colors in there, so they're both variegated.
Two colors, and yet there's not really, is there? There's a tan and purple and orange, so tell me how that
works. Because they're variegated. Both skeins are variegated. So they just complement each other. And that's the fun part, is kind of coming up with the different colors. I made a different one. My husband wanted a pullover. Hey, Mike, come here. So, I just want to show you a sweater.
So, we don't want you, we want the sweater.
So I made the same sweater for my husband, but with different colors. He wanted a pullover.
This is the same sweater
same
as this?
Same exact sweater, but just different colors.
Okay, so when you say the same sweater, you're meaning this pattern
with this
row,
is the same.
This and this.
It's on here.
So but you just made this into a cardigan.
Yeah.
And that into
a pullover.
That's beautiful, too.
Yeah.
So the variegated portion is, you might have do you by any chance have a skein of this yarn?
I have the yarn right here. The boxes are right here.
Okay,
so anybody could like pick out different colors and make their own version.
So, for instance, this sweater might be something like that for the orange
part. Yeah.
And then the tan might be this tan with a slightly pinkish hue.
Yeah, you could pick something like this, you know.
And that's just those two.
Yeah.
And yet, look at the variation in that. That's an amazing amount of color in this.
Yeah, yeah. That's so because it's variegated. So you have multiple colors in each skein.
Now, this is something with meaning, too, because if you look at the button and the pewter button, when you knit, you have to take into consideration that whatever button you buy is going to fit into the hole that you make.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't go back on that. So you have to plan this way ahead of time.
Well, I guess you could, if the hole is too large, I guess you could stitch up and make it smaller. There's ways of doing that. Making it larger could be a little bit more complicated, but you could always make it smaller.
Okay, now this is an incredibly soft.
Yeah, it's a merino.
So merino is the soft
Yeah,
soft
that's
wool,
the
correct?
Softest wool you can have.
Okay, so it's 100% merino?
Yeah, yeah.
Now it says textured cardigan. Is that the That's weave because that of makes my it feel
design.
Like that?
That's the design. It's a textured design because you have knit and purl and you have slip stitches. And then you have, yeah, so it's like, that's why it's textured.
Now, somebody walking up this says, this sweater, it's marked as $459.
Yeah.
And you might walk up to that and say, $459 for a sweater.
Yeah.
Tell me what the wool costs.
Well, you probably have about between $80 and $100 just in the yarn. Have the buttons.
So, and if these buttons are pewter and they're...
Solid pewter. Okay. Yeah, so... You probably have like maybe $15 in buttons.
Okay, so your materials alone, you start out are...
Probably about 100.
Okay, yeah. Now tell me how long it takes to make this sweater.
A month. It takes a month to knit it, and that's after it's all designed.
In terms of hours, what would that be?
You're probably talking, well, I don't know, maybe 120.
Yeah, I'm not going to knit for 8 hours a day. Are you going to knit for eight hours
a
day?
Yeah, my hands are twisted. Yeah, wow. And I have holes in my fingers from the knitting needles. It gets really bad at Christmas time.
So you're really making, I have not had enough coffee yet to do the math on this particular thing. How much do you make an hour after
You don't that? Even think about that. You're doing it because you have the passion. Yeah, it's like anything else. Anybody who does anything creative, they have the passion. If you don't have the passion, you wouldn't be doing it.
Now, is this a career? You have a booth here.
I do it for a living. We do it for a living. Yeah. I've done it for a living for 25 years. And my husband started maybe about 16 years ago. I taught him weaving. So we also have rugs, wool rugs and cotton rugs and a lot of other woven. But we don't bring it to these shows because people are mainly here for the fiber and they want to create what we design or what other people design. We have I like other people's designs too. So, and I always learn something from different people. I like to kind of broaden my horizon and, you know, we don't all think the same way, but you can always learn from somebody else.
I keep thinking this is very much like a painting, isn't it? You're sort of taking different materials, different colors and shapes, and you're making something new that is a work of art.
Or like cooking, right? You add a little pitch, and you know, we all have different tastes, so, yeah.
Yeah, and it never ends. One little thing changes everything, doesn't it?
And my patterns change with time, too, because, you know, I'm thinking of different ways of doing things, you know. We always do that. Yeah, we don't stay stagnant. That would be too boring. I would die if I did that. And I can't make the same thing twice. It's always different, and that's why we have the hand dyed. Because when you work two things, even if you do the same design, if it's hand-dyed, it's going to come out totally different.
And that's going to be, we talked to Tammy at Wing of the Fair, and that's different depending on the seasons and the conditions and the climate, what happens with the sheep, what happens with the dyeing process.
The fibers, I mean, I do some hand spin too, and I used to do everything from scratch, but I don't have the time anymore because I can only spin two skeins in a day. But the sheep, like the fiber is different, but even when I buy the yarn that I dye, that's different every season too. It's based on what comes in, you know? So that's always variables.
So are you influenced by fashion of the moment or not really?
We don't pay attention to anything. I just do whatever I feel like. Yeah, no, I don't pay attention.
And there are some people that are though, so this whole world of knitting is...
There's something for everybody.
Everybody.
There's something for everybody. Yeah, and every skill level, you know, it's just amazing. I've talked to people who learn knitting in their like 60s because they wanted a pair of socks and they decided. And this one lady said she went on YouTube 50 times and she finally got it. She taught herself how to do it. And she was doing amazing lace work within a year.
Yes.
So it's like if you have the passion, you can do it.
Yes. And it's also one of those things that with knitting in general, I know my mom and my grandmother were great knitters.
Uh-huh.
And they also had arthritis.
Yeah.
So my mom said, I have to knit every day because
She's
if
great.
I don't, my hands don't stay.
And lubricate your joints.
Yes.
And then, of course, you put a teaspoon of ginger in your oatmeal every morning for breakfast or yogurt or whatever you have, and that helps with the inflammation on the joints too.
So it not only helps with arthritis, I think the Arthritis Foundation would pick up on this as a great thing, but also I know that my mom, when she was driving with my dad was not the world's most cautious driver, she said, I can knit and I can look down and I can feel like I'm doing something when I can't do anything else on the road and I'm not paying
attention.
You're
not wasting your time.
Yes, and it's all in a little bag that she would carry with her, and so it's a very wonderful thing to be able to do.
It's very, I mean, you can go anywhere. You can sit in, you know, if you're in a doctor's office, sofas and sitting, wasting your time. You might as well be knitting a pair of socks or something,
yes.
you know.
And feel like you're accomplishing something.
Yeah, you're not wasting your time.
And it's sort of meditation in a way,
isn't
it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people during this period have been getting the benefit of knitting.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's like it is like meditation.
Yeah, I would
it's
say
very
so.
Relaxing. Yeah. And I always tell people it's cheaper to buy a skein of yarn than to go and pay a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or whatever. You know,
yeah, you're
that's
right.
a lot more expensive.
You're
so,
right, you're
you know,
right.
I don't think people should feel guilty about wanting to create something themselves with their own two hands.
That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Now, you create all kinds of things here.
Yeah.
So you have hats and sweaters and
mittens and
scarves, these shawls, I think, are fantastic.
Those are woven. Yeah,
beautiful.
Weave those, yeah.
And so the hats that you have here, do you do a lot of those?
I do all of it. I do wow. all of it, yeah.
Wow. Well, they're so cute. They're such cute little beanies. I mean, they're
yeah.
just absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
So if somebody wants to find you,
yeah.
do you have a website or social media?
We do. So we have a yarn website called yarnhugger.com. And then we have the Scandinavian Weave and Knit website, which was the original one. But you can't shop on that. But at least you can contact us that way. But I have to do something about that. It hasn't been changed since 2006.
Yeah.
Because it was designed way back at the beginning of the internet. And I have to move it over to some other place where people could actually shop. But the thing is, I only have two hands.
Yes.
And we're doing shows.
And I'd
and
much rather you keep your two hands busy doing this
yeah,
beautiful
but
thing.
And the other thing is, if I have it on a website and somebody shops there and buys it, I can't have it out at a show and sell it at the same time.
That's true.
So you have to have a double inventory. And I'm not so sure I'm able to do both.
Yeah. No,
so,
isn't that the problem in many things? The people
yeah.
that are doing don't have time to market. And if
both.
You did, you wouldn't be as likely to produce a product.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah
exactly.
Yeah.
You have
well, so this is a big show for you then, right? Rhinebeck?
Oh, yeah. Rhinebeck is huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. And the best thing about this sheep and wool festival, you do not get anybody telling you that they can buy cheap at Walmart.
Yes.
They all appreciate what you do. And we even have knitters buy our finished knitted because they would never make it, but they do appreciate it.
Yeah.
And they do appreciate the amount of time it takes to make.
Yeah. I have to tell you, I've been eyeing this one sweater every time I go by, and I'm kind of thinking about asking my husband for Christmas, birthday, and Christmas
yeah,
again.
Yeah.
But it I do fear that I sometimes might not be willing to wear it because it is so beautiful.
Yeah, that's,
it is just
you
so
definitely,
beautiful.
You definitely have to wear your hand knit. Yeah.
So do you sell this pattern as well?
Yeah. yeah
okay, what do you call this again?
It's the textured cardigan.
Okay.
And that is on our Yarnhugger website.
Would you spell that for me, please?
Yarn? Yarnhygge. And that's because our business name was Heirlooms. And when we got my first website, since we do weaving and knitting, I call it Scandinavian Weave and Knit since I'm Danish. And then, of course, hygge goes with Danish, cozy, knitting, you know. So that's how we got the Danish Yarnhygge.
It's beautiful. Sounds like you're singing when you speak.
Yeah.
Lovely.
yeah, well, still got the Danish accent. So.
Yeah, it's lovely. My grandfather was from Belgium, so yeah, it was like singing
know.
To hear
yeah.
him speech too. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rest of Rhinebeck in
yeah.
your spare time.
Oh, thank you.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please ask your friends to join us. Please also feel free to post any comments or questions to our social media sites. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under Backyard Green Films. Thanks again for listening. We love to bring you this podcast every week. We visit places all across the country and even a few places outside the U.S. We'd love to keep doing this as long as we can, but holy cow, gas is expensive. So, we've started up a Patreon account. If you'd like to help be a part of the stories you hear, we'd love your support, feedback, and suggestions. If you'd like to make that financial support, please follow the Patreon links in our podcast intro for more information. Every little bit is another mile we can put on the road to bring you the conversations we hope you enjoy. We want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
We would like to thank Lise for joining us today. If you'd like to find out more information about her or see her products, please visit her website at ScandinavianWeaveAndKnit.com. We'll see you next week with another adventure. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for more upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2021.